Hello, and there's only one thing to say to you today, and that is...
We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.
And if you're wondering just who that might be, well, I can tell you this...
Or what?
Or what, indeed. This could be something of a one-off, because today it is the specialists of specialists. We have around the table, possibly, and I'm thinking chaps, and we are all chaps here today, for the first time ever... All of Manx Radio's specialist music presenters in one room, around one table. Now, can anyone think here, has this ever happened before? And when I say all the specialist presenters, I'm talking about Ian Cottier, I'm talking about Chris Kane, I'm talking about John Kinnean, I'm talking about Maurice Powell, and I'm talking about Ernie Thorne, of course, all of whom will be very familiar names to all or any Manx Radio listener of a weekday evening. Has anyone been around the table with all the specialist presenters before in their career? Any takers?
No, definitely not.
No.
I'll ask Ernie when he comes back. He's just checking the door hasn't been locked from the outside. It's not a devilish plot. No, I don't think we have.
No, I don't think we have either. So it is something
just like your father, then.
He did. Well, he is like his father. He's getting that age already, isn't he?
And he's like his father too, but we can't help that.
Yes, exactly.
So what about the other way around? Has anyone, I was just thinking when we sat there before, most of us know each other, although I think you, John, were saying you had never actually met Maurice before.
No, I hadn't before tonight.
No. Yeah, it is amazing, and I think that's one of those strange...
And a splendid fellow he is, too.
Well, you're looking
a nice bald head, if I may say so.
Well, thank you. Most people who meet me for the first time, they sort of, you know, need a bit of assistance and therapy afterwards, but you seem to be recovered very quickly.
Yes.
Yes, well, it's an interesting thing, because I think we were looking again at the table, and just before we came up to the studio to record this epic for our Christmas Day, and Merry Christmas again to everyone, of course, I am actually the baby. At a mere 58, I am the youngest specialist music presenter. Is that right? Can anyone beat 58 as the youngest year?
No, well, I would like to.
No takers. John, you're in your early 70s now, are you?
Yes. Well, I'm approaching 50, but from the wrong end. I was 80 in October.
80 in October. Goodness me. Ian's in 80. Maurice, you're only in your 60s?
Can this be edited? I shall never see 45 again, or 55.
Get a telescope.
Or 65.
And Ernie,
I'm
you're
not
the...
prepared to go any further than that.
No, exactly.
And the next instalment, 75.
You must be the same. Yeah, same age as us. Goodness me. So a combined age of... Well, you can work that out yourselves.
I thought you were going to say that, Maurice. You'd never see 45 or 78 or 33 and a third again, was what I was thinking you were going to say. But yes, of course, everybody who listens to Jumping In knows that I'm the younger brother by some considerable gap, but we won't labour that point.
So we just thought it'd be a wonderful idea, as a bit of a Christmas one-off, to get us all round the table to think about it. And time for brass. Well, it's 40-year celebration this year, of course.
It was indeed, yes. It's 40 years and counting.
And counting, yeah. We're on to the next 40
I'll share this with you, Howard. I was actually thinking of making it neat and packing up at the 40-year point.
Well, you know what? I heard that rumoured beforehand and I thought, really? I sort of struggled to believe it. I thought, well, unless you really, really had enough, or, you know, you felt that was it, you were moving on or something. But you know, such was the passion and I know your love of the music as well. I thought, I don't know. I sort of... Someone said it to me and said, I think Ian's thinking of calling it a day at 40. And I thought, OK, well, we'll see what happens. Yeah. But, you're going for the next 40 now, which is good.
Well, yes, that would make me 125.
Well, we do have it in the wings, just in case. I know William King has been on your programme before now, and he, a young man who's been very evident on Mike's radio over the last year or two, is studying at York University at the moment. But he's I sometimes think he could be the next Ian, that he's got a great passion for brass band music and a great knowledge of it, and he's very handy on the radio. So I'm thinking maybe, yes, wherever he was, I think William could could be your natural successor whenever you do decide to hang up your microphone.
Well, there is another as well. There's another, there's another on the short list, and that's James Davis.
Oh, of course, yes, I've forgotten James.
James is a fine musician.
He is.
Steeped in brass band and other kinds of music, but very articulate and not unfamiliar with the microphone.
Oh, gosh, they might have to be fighting for the time for brass seat. Hopefully not for a few years yet. I think you should, at the very least, go on for 60 years and then see how it goes from there, I reckon. That's probably the best bet. How long have you been folking, John? You must have been...
43.
43 years. Has that been continuous, or...?
Well, yeah, to a certain extent, the radio station used to knock off the specialist music programmes during the summer. For some reason. Well, the reason, obviously, is they wanted to play more pop music and didn't need us. But from a point of view of an annual thing, yes, 43 years.
You know,
continuous.
I remember that because I remember having exactly the same debate with someone who was in power at the time. I can't remember. It might have been George. I really can't remember now. The concept was that people in the summer months didn't listen to the specialist programmes because it was light in the evening and people went out doing other things, whereas in the winter they would. Whereas I often thought if you were interested in opera or folk or classical or jazz, then surely you would listen year-round, was my theory.
Yeah.
How did you first get into folk in your case?
David Collister.
Really?
That was how I got into Manx Radio. David was an old friend of mine for many, many years. And David was very enthusiastic about radio as a medium. And he got a job here. And at the time, I was working in Liverpool and was knocking about on the folk circuit in Liverpool. And I used to record artists who came up to Liverpool and send them over here to him to use on his folk programme. David used to do a folk programme, a country programme, a classical music programme. He did anything and everything.
A polymath.
He was so enthusiastic. Yeah. But I came back to the Isle of Man and David said, it's a bit of a strain doing all this. Would you like to take it on? And I did.
Marvellous. It's a wonderful thing going back. What about you, Morris? Your sort of love of classical, does that go way back when?
Oh, it does. It goes probably when I was sort of 7 or 8, maybe, really. We had one 78 record in the family and a wind-up gramophone to play it on. And on one side was a little piece, which I've hardly managed to track down. I can't even remember the composer, called The Entrance of the Little Fauns. And I used to play this over and over again. And on the other side was a potted version, a shortened version of Ravel's Bolero. It must have been less than half its actual length, which is about 20 minutes. So one side of a 78. There wasn't much of it, but I used to play both of these until basically the grooves were coming out the other side. And then eventually we got an ordinary record player, you know, with an old-fashioned record changer. And by that time I was playing, you know, the school bus band and thinking seriously about buying a French horn. So the first sort of LP I can remember buying was Dennis Brain playing Mozart's horn concertos, and I played that to death. I've still got it, along with two or three other, the very first LPs I ever bought. Mostly Mozart, I have to say. I was absolutely stuck on Mozart at the time, to exclusion of almost anybody else. But that's where it started, really. So influence of school, joined the band, bought a French horn, did 2 paper rounds a day to save up for a deposit. My grandfather put the rest, got a French horn, had lessons, eventually went to Guildhall School of Music and Drama, played in London for a while, and then gradually moved north to Yorkshire, saw the light, as it were, got out of the smoke, moved to Heriot country, and the rest is for another programme. But it started fairly early, but I remember most of all hearing things on the radio, the old radio shows, Billy Cotton's Band Show, all that kind of thing, on Sundays, you know, the Forces' favourites, and whatever was playing then, you know. I'm haunted by memories of what's his name, whoever it was, singing "She Wears Red Feathers on Her Hooly Hooly Skirt."
Oh, yes.
That was a hit. Who sang that?
Who was that? I can't remember. Oh, I know the song, but
I think I was traumatised by that.
Somebody.
Guy Mitchell.
Ah,
that's it.
Well done,
Guy
John.
Mitchell. And but once we got a title of Ravel's Bolero and a bit of Mozart, I managed to get that out. But that's where it started.
Going way back when. It is the Specialists of Specialists today, Christmas Day here on Manx Radio, and we have all of Manx Radio's specialist music presenters. We have John Kinney from the Folk Show, Morris Powell from Little Light Music, Ernie Thorne from the Opera Hour, Chris and myself, H from Jumping In, myself from also listening to Sweet and Swing, and of course Ian Cottier, Time for Brass. And yeah, we are going to have some music. It's not going to be all chat. So John, you've brought some music with you, a bit of folk. What's the first track you'd like to have a little listen to on the folk front?
Well, Morris was talking about how he became interested in his kind of music. I became interested in folk music like many other people of my age during the skiffle boom of the 1950s. Lonnie Donegan. It took off and it influenced so many other musicians. John Lennon was influenced. They had the He was in a skiffle group at the beginning of the Beatles. But I've brought along the maestro of skiffle, Lonnie Donegan, together with somebody who was influenced with the skiffle movement. But his name, I can't for the life of me bloody remember. The Irish singer, what's his name? Van Morrison, right.
There we are, and that's who we're talking
about.
And
this is a recording of Van Morrison, the pupil, and Lonnie Donegan, the teacher.
Let's hear it. Sounds good stuff. Van Morrison and Lonnie Donegan. So, Lonnie Donegan, that, along with Van Morrison, John, is that right?
Van Morrison, that's right, yes. Actually, that is a traditional American tune, but of course it was recorded, I think, that particular version of it in the 1980s, 1990s, probably.
And, of course, Van Morrison's definitely been over here. He's could have seen him. There was a bit of debate as we were listening as to whether Lonnie Donegan's actually played on the island. You're thinking Morrissey?
I agree with John, because it was they did broadcast an episode of 6-5 Special from the Villa Marina and had odd sorts of odd people on it. But Lonnie Donegan was there. And I think they actually interviewed Ivy Benson, who was here with her band as a kind of a guest artist.
Her all-girl
band.
But
I don't think the all-girl band played on 6-5 Special. It wouldn't be their thing, really. But she was like the guest celebrity, and she was interviewed by whoever the compere was, and I can't remember who that was. Was
Pete
it someone
Murray,
like Peter
I
West
think.
Or Pete Murray?
Murray.
Pete Murray. But Lonnie Donegan was said in the preview to be coming to the island, but I've not then managed to find a review to see whether he did actually come here or whatever. But yeah, 6-5 Special.
I have a shooting script for it that I stole.
Ah.
Whether I should think I've probably thrown it out some years ago.
The mind boggles.
Otherwise, you could have had it, Morris.
Well, it would have been very interesting to see.
It would have been good. Ernie, is that the sort of stuff you ever listened to in your younger years? Or?
Yeah, I was very much into pop, really. And the thing that I think what triggered my interest in sort of musical theatre and opera was going to the old Crescent Cinema on the Promenade to see West Side Story, the Leonard Bernstein. And it just grabbed me, and from there on I moved other musicals and things. So I think musical theatre is all the same sort of thing, isn't it? You've got poetry, it's like a stage play set to music, you know, people, it's everything. Opera is everything rolled into one, as is musical theatre. And I went from there on to opera and some of the popular ones to begin with, Carmen and La Boheme. And it was La Boheme, I think, would be my first choice as a piece, really. Your Tiny Hand is Frozen. Everybody's heard of Your Tiny Hand is Frozen, but they don't always know exactly what it's about. And I've got an English recording of it by English National Opera. They've recorded an awful lot of operas now, because opera in Italy, in Verdi's time, was their pop music, you know, and there was one particular of his arias that he kept under wraps until the day of the first performance of it, because he knew as soon as the tune got out it would be a smash hit, and he didn't want anybody cribbing it before the first performance, and that was La Donna Immobile from Rigoletto, which was the pop song of the time. And probably because it's in the Italian language, the Italians would all love it. It's a bit strange listening to words in a foreign language, but English National Opera do a good job of doing translations. So Your Tiny Hand is Frozen in an English version.
Well, you've mentioned that. I think it sounds like an appropriate time. Let's have a listen to it now. So an English version of Your Tiny Hand is Frozen from La Bohème. An English version of Your Tiny Hand is Frozen from La Bohème.
Not like Don't You Rock Me Daddy-O at all, would it?
The sentiments are almost identical, funnily enough. Yeah.
The interesting thing, though, is you were saying just before we were listening to that, though, Ernie, sort of you were saying it was, you know, the pop music of the day in opera, like classical, and some classical music would have been dance music of its day or whatever. The folk music definitely been a poppy, and jazz as well at this side of the table in its time is also the pop music. In a way, they've all of the different specialist music have been at one stage or another in their history pop music to a degree. Yes. You could argue one way or another.
In some cases, popular music, if you could afford to go, popular music for the nobility, in the case of a lot of classical music, particularly in the 18th century, halfway through the 19th century, before public concerts were organised. I mean, opera, mainly in the 18th century, was the province of private opera houses and private performances. The likes of thee and me wouldn't have got near the place.
You'd have been singing folk music.
Drunk in a pub somewhere in London, I think.
Singing folk music.
Carousing. Yes, more than likely. Yes, you're right.
Jazz we were mentioning as well, and I've got my confrère here as well on the jazz front, Brother Chris. And, you sort of, in many ways, I got into jazz through you and through the old maestro, our dad as well. Can you remember going back way back when you first peaked in jazz?
I can. In fact, I can go further than that. I think I have the unique distinction, given that we're in such revered company around the table here today, that I'm probably the first that did the first broadcast on Manx Radio of anyone here. I'm guessing that. You can deny this, gentleman, but that was in 1965 for, funnily enough, an advert for James Cain's Christmas sale, which was jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way down to Cain's in Athol Street. That's the shop, they say. And that was down when Manx Radio...
Classic.
Socks and shirts, goods and so on.
Well, the shops are available.
It was where the Strand Centre is now. On the promenade, not the Strand, the other one, Tower House, rather. And it was on the promenade in a couple of very small rooms. And Hilary and I were dragged down there, and me, age six, to go and sing this advert for Dad, who had, throughout our childhood, of course, a live piano show, which he did every week on the radio for many, many years. And when we all duly took up instruments, and piano particularly, first jazz piece Dad taught me to play when I was learning classical music, of course, was the Yancey Special by Beadlux Lewis, dedicated to Yancey, Jimmy Yancey, pianist and boogie-woogie player, of course. But one of the first ones I really wanted to learn, because it was exuberant, different, wild, witty and clever, was Fats Waller with Viper's Drag.
Oh, classic. Let's hear it. Absolute classic.
Fats Waller back, born back in 1904, the son of a preacher in Harlem. And interestingly, one of the other pieces of music I looked at as a big influence from Dad, and yet sounding so, so modern, was Duke Ellington, who was the most recorded of all and most published of all jazz musicians. And he actually, his birth predates Fats Waller by some 5 years in 1899. But
we were just saying again as we were listening to that and talking about, you know, piano style and playing, and how the old maestro used to be pretty darn handy at playing stride, even though he only had very small hands. And you were saying, Morris, as well, from the classical front, people like Chopin, who sort of wrote so much almost impossible music for some pianists to play, and yet he, again, didn't have sort of these massive hands or indeed these long, thin fingers, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit of a myth that you have to have hands like spades to be a great piano player, classical or jazz.
Exactly. I've had the privilege of turning the pages for a number of excellent pianists who come to the Ramsey Music Society concerts, and a lot of them have very small hands. I've not come across anybody with the sort of the classic long, thin fingers that Liszt is supposed to have had. I don't know whether he actually did. I would have thought that, you know, like mine, short, stubby fingers are better, really. There's less to get in the way of the keys.
Stronger, certainly. I mean, I know we saw, funnily enough, at a London Jazz Festival a couple of years ago, a pianist who's done very well for himself, and he's been to the island a couple of times, great classical Gwilym. Pianist as well as a jazz pianist, Gwilym Simcock. Mm. And he was doing a week of residency in the Pizza Express. And we went to see him on the first evening. He was going to play a solo set and then play with some other people who were in the festival. And he came on with his arm, his right arm in a sling, and introduced himself saying, "The eagle-eyed amongst you may have noticed that my right hand," and it was all bandaged up in a sling. And the night before his first concert, he'd had a fall playing five-a-side football, torn all the tendons in his hand.
Ooh.
So we were expecting him to announce that sadly he wasn't going to be playing and there was going to be a dep or somebody standing in, or a number of deps. And he said, "So now that we've got that out of the way, I'll be playing the first hour's set by myself, and then I'll be playing with the band." And, you know, he played a whole hour's set of solo piano just with his left hand. If you closed your eyes, you wouldn't have known the difference. So, as I say,
that's incredible.
As you were saying, Morris, entirely down to skill and practice.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Oh, gosh, that's amazing.
Wasn't there some music written for one-armed players?
There is.
Quite a lot of left-handed music.
Yeah.
Is written to,
and there is, I heard something fairly recently. Yeah, there was someone on the circuit now, I think, a concert pianist who just has one hand.
The famous concerto is Ravel, Concerto for the Left Hand, which I think was written for a German pianist who had lost an arm during the war. And Richard Strauss also wrote a piece for this same guy. But who was there was a piano duo, Phyllis Selick and somebody.
I think
he had one arm. And they played here. And also as solo artists. But they used to play sort of like three-handed piano duets. A bit like Ravitz and Landau, but not quite. I can't remember. Phyllis Selick and somebody. But I remember seeing them on television. And again, if you'd closed your eyes, you would never have known. But to hear this Ravel concerto, which you can imagine is not easy, and with the hands flashing across, or the hand flashing across the keyboard, I don't know how they do it.
Amazing stuff. Selick and Smith.
That's it. You're right.
There we go. Selick and Smith.
Yeah.
A round of applause, please.
Thank you very much. The wonder of headphones, everyone.
I think his phone friend is getting information over the ether.
I could make a fortune on it.
Yes.
We're struggling here to actually remember. He's just getting the answers from a friend.
To win a million.
I was going to say, I could make a lot. Someone start coughing in the right. And we could get
those of you without vision, Howard is the only one wearing the Manx Radio studio headphones because times are hard.
He's also got the only Manx Radio. Biro as well.
It is, yes.
And the official sheet of paper.
I'll pass it around later if anyone wants to use it. You are listening, of course, to Manx Radio. Where else would you be on a Christmas day? And this is our, yes, Christmas special, and it's a special of specials, as it were, because we have, for one day only, as it were, Christmas Day in this case, we have all of Manx Radio's specialist music presenters of 2020, and indeed going back 40-plus years, in some cases, around the table. So we have Brother Chris to my left from A Jumping In fame. We've got John Kinnean, who you'll hear, of course, doing the folk show, as he has done for 40-plus years. Morris Powell, you've just heard there, doing A Little Light Music, of course, regularly on a Thursday night. Ernie Thorne on a Wednesday with the Opera Hour. And, of course, 40 years and still going strong, Time for Brass, Ian Cottier. All round the table in one room. We think, possibly for the first time ever, that people have got together.
And sober.
And sober. Well,
and cheap.
Cheap is the word. That's a word we like here at Manx Radio. Cheap. Yes, indeed. Now then, I'm very aware you haven't actually had a piece of music from your own Christmas cracker yet.
Well, I'm going to interject some repose into the proceedings, really. It's getting a little out of hand. I can't help feeling, or it's likely to anyway. We probably all play the Desert Island Discs game from time to time. And if it came down to one disc only, what would it be?
Ooh.
Very, very Ooh. Difficult. Very, very difficult. Well, I'm not going to go there, but I also play the game of, I wonder what is the most beautiful piece of music ever written? Obviously, it's impossible.
Yeah, very subjective, I suppose.
Very, very subjective. But I'm going to put this forward because it's about 3.5 minutes, I think, of pure heaven. It's a Crucifixus, written in the early 18th century by an Italian composer, Venetian composer, called Antonio Lotti, who is not well remembered today. He was also an almost exact contemporary of Vivaldi, of course, who is very well known today. They both worked in Venice, And Lottie got a plum job at the court of Dresden after that. And not a lot known about him. He wrote operas and sacred music. This little Crucifixus, I think, is a gem. And if it's not the most beautiful piece of music ever written, it's got to be in the top 20, top 100 anyway, at least. So there we are, the Crucifixus of Antonio Lotti.
Oh, you got the CD there.
This is the unfinished and also unheard Crucifixus of Antonio Lotti. It does start quite quietly, but not that quietly.
Sarah was very confused because she thought you were being very patriotic. She had Manx Country Dancers lined up and she said, I'm sure it's lovely, but it's very... I didn't think that would be the most beautiful piece of music in the world.
I think you might not be far off, Morris.
I have a confession to make, really. Whilst I was listening to that, I couldn't help getting the Lonnie Donegan out of my head that we heard earlier. Sorry, folks, this is the way it is. No, it is a lovely piece, and it doesn't outstay its welcome. That's a good thing. I love these sort of endless suspensions over and over again that come. It's
beautiful. Yeah. So Ernie, I'd imagine you to sort of like it. Do you have a hankering? Do you like classical music well, John?
Yes, I do. Some, not all, but some, certainly. I was just thinking that one of the...
I heard something, yeah.
Well, I try to think before I speak, not like some people.
You shouldn't be working at Manx Radio with an attitude like that.
But I was just thinking that I had one of the nicest pieces of music that I think, classical music that I think I like, is Le Roi X, the Aubade from the opera Le Roi X. It is so typically French. It couldn't be anything else but French. And it is a beautiful song.
Your thoughts on that one, Ernie?
It's one of yeah, it's your a lovely favorite? Song. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's not one I'm trying to think of. I don't know whether I actually know it or not. I probably don't off the top of my head. Do you know, Chris?
I was thinking that listening to what we've had on the show
Okay, that sounding familiar when I hear the melody. Yes. Okay, we should hear that at some stage.
I don't think we've got it with us today. Pervaded all of these, really, because I mean, a lot of the history of jazz as a popular music came from folk idioms, from the blues, and before that, a lot of the classical music came from folk idioms and from folk themes. A lot of the early religious music came from scriptures and for things that were passed on by word of mouth, or indeed melodies that were passed on by word of mouth, and equally the opera telling stories and whatnot. But so that sort of element of storytelling in folk history is beyond all of them, isn't it?
Yes. That Aubade was a folk melody. It's set on the eve of a wedding, and the bride's friends try to prevent the groom from getting to the bride on the wedding evening, and he sings that Aubade to ask for permission to get through to them. And it's based on a French folk melody. So
yes, yeah. But the most awkward question is, what is a folk song?
Yes.
You know, try and answer it. I tell people, oh, well, it's anything that Manx Radio doesn't play during the day. And that's my definition of it anyway.
That's a good answer. So is the difference between folk and country, is country purely country and western, or is there a...
Well, there are even classifications of country. There's country and western. There's old-time music in America. And it's all on the period, really. Country and western music now is just pop music, as a lot of folk music is, to be perfectly honest.
Yes, yeah, it seems that way. And yet you listen, as I do, listening every week to your show with your own folk show, and there's such a mixture going way back when. And it seems like there's a real spread in that some music almost has a classical tinge to it. There's some stuff definitely which is moving into the jazz arena. Yeah. And that there's a real sort of widespread. And again, some of it sort of it's very serious, some of it very lighthearted. It sort of covers a whole gamut, really.
Yes. Yes. Well, at some time, well, during our later life, A lot of the comedians were coming out of folk music. People like we were talking about earlier on, Mike Harding.
Oh, yes,
and,
yes.
Jasper Carrot.
Jasper Carrot, indeed. And Jake Thackeray. Yes, I'm not sure whether Jake... Well, what made Jake Thackeray folk music? You could say he wrote songs about his life and what he knew about Yorkshire, particularly. And Jake came over here to the Isle of Man. I remember seeing him in the Villa Garden Room many years ago. Dave Sale, the landlord of the Falcon Cliff, brought him over, I think it was. But Jake came to a rather sad end. He was hitting the bottle, and he died on the 24th of December, 1 year. And this is another of my song choices. It's his last will and testament.
I want no great wet weepings, no tearing of hair, no wringing of hands, no sighs, no lack-a-days, no woe is me.
There we go. You see, Jake Thackeray. I always thought, I mean, he's a great performer. He always had that sort of style that I never, his lips never seemed to be moving as much as the words were coming out, if you know what I mean.
Sort of... Yes, yes. It was a dry sort of person, too. And he played a nylon strung guitar, which was unusual in folk clubs, really.
It was in those days, I must admit.
How did your love affair with brass music start then, Ian?
Well, pretty well the way most other kids start. When I was quite small, I went along to a band room in the loft over the vicarage stable, and it was Russian Silver Band, and I've had a love affair with Russian Silver Band ever since. But then it sort of moved on, and for the past 70 years, brass bands have been a major part of my life.
And what was it, do you think, which sort of drew or still has kept your interest over all these years with the specifics of brass band music? Is it sort of the historical links, or its links with the parts of the country, or what is it?
Well, there's a lot of fascinating history. There's a lot of social history involved with brass bands. But in fact, I think what attracted me to Russian Silver and other bands subsequently was the, what you might call the community issue, because the community involvement of many bands is very high indeed, even some of the very best.
Now, you brought some music along as well, of course, for our specialist evening. Here we are on Christmas. It is Christmas around the table, of course, with all the specialist music presenters. And we have, like I said, obviously, we've got Time for Brass, we've got the jazz, we've got Sweet and Swing, we've got John Kanin with his folk. Now, one of your records here you brought on vinyl, and this isn't actually brass band music.
No, in fact, I've deliberately not chosen brass band music because people hear me talking about brass band music almost any time. But there was a period of my life, 4 years when I was at Manchester, when I was immersed in music of every possible kind. And it was a wonderful place to be because there was opera, there was ballet, there was jazz, there was the Halle Orchestra, and so much music was going on that actually during that 4 years, I hardly touched brass bands apart from when I came home on holiday.
So this is Carmen Jones. Tell us a bit about that.
Carmen Jones, yes. It was a film. Harry Belafonte and Dorothy Dandridge were the principal characters, but their voices were dubbed, the songs were dubbed for them. And it was a recreation of the Carmen story brought up to modern times, the tail end of the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And the music is actually true to Bizet's original. The music isn't changed at all, and it has been made into this absolutely wonderful film, which riveted me so much that I think I went to see it about six times in a fortnight.
And can you remember what it was that sort of riveted you at that time as a young man? What sort of drew you into it? Was it purely the music? Was it the colour? Was it the... What was it sort of...
Well, it was all of those things. But it was the ingenuity of taking something that I was already reasonably familiar with and transplanting it into something which was both practically and emotionally satisfying.
And it is cracking music, I must admit. Let's hear a track now. So you've chosen one. Short and sweet, this one. There's a cafe under corner. Oscar Hammerstein II's Carmen Jones with the music, of course, by Bizet.
How can a lady drink alone? How can a lady dance alone? No lady can romance alone. I ought to have a sweetie pie.
Lovely stuff. Short and sweet, as they say. You are listening to Manx Radio here on Christmas Day, of course, and this is a Christmas special, a special of specialists, in that we have all of the music specialists from Manx Radio throughout the week. So if you ever tune in of an evening, then, and I better get this right, on Monday night at 9 o'clock, you will hear Ian Cottier with Time for Brass. On Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, you'll hear John Kinnean with the Folk Hour. On Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, you'll hear Ernie Thorne with the Opera Hour. On Thursday night at 9 o'clock, you'll hear A Little Light Music with Maurice Powell. On Friday night at 9 o'clock, you'll hear Yours Truly with Sweet and Swing. And on Saturday at 9 o'clock, it's Jumping In with Chris and myself, H. What a fantastic miscellany of music. We're celebrating all of those musics this evening. And for one day only, we're all round the table talking about it as well. And I'm just thinking, yes, speaking of jumping in some jazz as well, you played a little bit of Fats Waller earlier on. I was thinking, again, sort of at the more modern end of the spectrum and some of the tunes I sort of that have meant so much to me over the years. Again, Maurice was saying earlier on, you know, playing Desert Island Discs and narrowing it down to one track. It's virtually impossible, isn't it, if you love your musics, whatever they are. I'm sure we'd all struggle to actually choose one track only to go to your desert island. But certainly Miles Davis is never far off the turntable, I think, probably in your house or my house or any jazz lover's house. And again, Kind of Blue is one of those albums that people who don't even like jazz will quite often have a copy of Kind of Blue somewhere. I'm saying that. Anyone have a copy of Kind of Blue by Miles Davis? I bet no one has around the table now.
I might have just misplaced mine. I'm not sure. I think I'm using it as a teapot.
I've got enough different versions to share out, to be honest.
But I do remember going back, and possibly again, I mean, I started listening when you were, you know, listening to some of your stuff, which was very jazz rocky or whatever, and then it must have been probably the late 70s, maybe 1979, 1980 or something. And I sort of vaguely remember, well, I do remember you having a cassette and saying, have a listen to this, this is really good. And it was Kind of Blue, Miles Davis. And I listened and thought, wow, this sounded so modern and so fresh and so different and really with it. And he said, that was 1959. I thought, 1959 was ancient prehistory, as I thought at the time, although it wasn't actually that long ago. Well, exactly. That's what I meant. But it just seemed, I was amazed that sort of music, which seemed to be, you know, made 3 years before I was born, could sound so fresh and so modern and so different with this modal jazz, this very different, sparse, cool, limpid sound sort of hanging in the air. Absolutely stunning. And I was hooked on Miles, and from there went to Miles and then found other jazz, and that was it. Then that started the whole jazz journey in a big way. So I thought, yeah, we better not have a specialist music programme and not play a little bit of Miles Davis. So I'm thinking, oh, there's so many tracks from all of the tracks from Kind of Blue. Well, we haven't got time. They're all quite long tracks, so we won't get all this one in either, but a little bit of All Blues. There you go. It is one of the, I think it is the best-selling jazz album of all time. Yeah. Even though there's only one copy around the table. No, two copies, because you've got a copy. Three copies. I've got two copies, come to think of it. I'll give Maurice one.
That would be great. We've certainly got the conversation going around the table when you unaccountably left the room, I have to say.
It was. I was on an urgent mission.
He didn't bring back the Prosecco either.
This is
a Manx Christmas, this one.
But you haven't had your bite of the mince pie yet, Boris. Come on. Well, just pass it on.
Been burping all afternoon. But why, you say that's jazz. What sort of jazz is it?
That would be classed as modern jazz. Yeah. And that's sort of one of the classics. So that was sort of modal when he was going into experimenting with modes, which gave it that sort of different sound. And it was very much at the cutting edge of jazz at the time, and I think led on to so much jazz after that. So it would still be very classed. I mean, jazz, again, there's this sort of, I know occasionally you might have a bit of trad maybe or something. Yes. on the folk show. Yeah. Coming into there. There's trad, there's the big band, there's the swing. Then you have mainstream jazz, you have modern jazz. Yeah. And then you have the sort of contemporary and avant-garde, which can be the very
very free stuff with no, you know, there's basically no rules whatsoever.
But when you say that's the best-selling jazz record, that's of all genres?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, supposedly, so I'm told.
You see, somebody like me would say, well, there wasn't much tune to it.
Yes, well, that's, I suppose that is a jazz sort of thing, really, where people say there's no sort of tune. And I know that is a common sort of criticism for people who you know, if you're not into jazz, where's the tune? Where's the tune? Mm.
It's about other things, isn't it? I mean, we were just talking earlier, I'm hearing a repeated figure there, sort of like an ostinato all the time, and all sorts of textures and different things like that. It's getting a bit heavy if we get into all that, isn't it?
But it sounds good, though.
But it's obviously totally different from, say, swing.
We know what we're talking
American,
about.
You know, American jazz or swing and that kind of thing. Totally different from that.
Absolutely.
I rather like that. I might just have to investigate that.
Oh, well, I might have a spare copy. I'll see if I've got one, in which case I shall drop it
if
off.
If it's free, that's free. Even better.
Free.
I shall really like
we're
it.
We're doing free.
No copyright's been infringed during this programme, just to make that clear.
What about you, Ernie? Are you a jazz taker? Have you listened to any jazz
I'm
at all?
I'm much into Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66 and Gilberto and the South American stuff for a long while. I like blues.
Room.
There's a lot of blues that I like as well, yes. I like all sorts of music. I do struggle a bit with modern jazz, but then I struggle a bit with modern classical music when you get into Stockhausen and people like
that. See, I like a bit of Stockhausen, but Stimmung and Gruppen and things, I quite like
Beecham was asked if he'd played any Stockhausen. He said, no, but I've trodden some.
Well, have we got time for a Stockhausen anecdote? I'll try and make it as brief
as
possible.
Please do.
And feel free to end
So this is Karl-Heinz Stockhausen, yes.
This is Karl-Heinz Stockhausen.
You either love him or hate him, basically.
Yeah, basically, most people hate him, but there you go.
Apart from me.
On his day, a good lad. I once had the privilege of playing Gruppen at a concert. It was a multi-college concert at the Royal Albert Hall, I think, years and years ago, late 60s. And we got four groups of players on the stage to play this piece. And we looked at the music and we thought, good heavens, what is this? It didn't even look like music, not at all. It was just play it freely. We had four conductors, four groups, basically do whatever you want. So I sat there thinking, I've absolutely no idea what to do with this. I mean, I like to have a part that's got horn one on it or horn two with notes I can read and bars I can count. This was nothing like this. It was a pictogram, really. So I sat there for a while and everybody seemed to be doing something. So and then the guy next to me picked up his horn and was whipping up and down and playing all sorts of stuff. And I said, how do you know... when to come in. He said, well, I just look at that bloke opposite over there. When he picks up his hooter and blows something, I do the same. So I did that. And everybody said afterwards it was absolutely fantastic. But I can announce here, folks, on Manx Radio, we had no idea what was going on. But they loved it.
Marvellous.
I rest my case.
It reminds me of the classic story about John Coltrane, the very famous tenor saxophonist who was renowned for playing very, very long solos, and he was once chastised by his boss at the time, Miles Davis, for playing far too long a solo. And he said, and John Coltrane said, well, the trouble is, when I get into my solo, I don't know how to stop. And Miles, who was equally very dry, said, try taking the horn out of your mouth. Ernie,
Stockhausen's son actually is a jazz trumpeter as well, isn't he?
He is, yeah, Marcus Stockhausen. Yeah, plays in the modern jazz spectrum.
Well.
We were saying about difficult things to get into. Opera, quite often people say, it is a difficult sort of genre to approach.
It depends. You can be very unlucky, and the first time you try opera, you end up with something that's not suitable. It's very much like drama, People who like Whitehall farces wouldn't take to Shakespeare and vice versa, So you've got to choose the right one. If you get to Wagner, it's a bit at the heavy end. But the popular stuff like Carmen and La Bohème, it's more accessible, especially, the modern versions of things. And an awful lot of opera melodies you hear on adverts and you'll recognise something.
Yeah.
And it's good listening to it, but the best way to enjoy opera is to see it, and if you get the chance to actually see what's going on stage, as well as hearing it, it's great. And of course, at the moment, there's an awful lot of opera on the TV that you can watch live streams.
Live from the Met, isn't it?
Yeah, Met and the European opera companies have Opera Vision, where they've each got a different opera that you can go on and watch. So something like Puccini or that's probably a good starting off point for most people.
Mm. Is there something else accessible we can listen to now, do you think?
There's another from La Boheme, actually, which is an interesting story, this one. La Boheme, of course, the opening act, two acts, take place on Christmas Eve, so it's quite topical. But there was a story linked to Caruso, and it's an interesting one. And there's I've got an old shellac record with this particular item on it.
It was in 78, is it?
Proper 78. And it was when the Metropolitan Opera used to do their matinee trips in Pennsylvania. And they were there one particular day, and Frances Alder was the Mimi. And she tells the story that when they get to Act Four and the bass Colina has to sing his coat aria, he turns to Caruso and says, "I've lost my voice. I can't sing. I won't be able to sing this." And Caruso says, "Don't worry. You turn, face the audience and mime the words and I'll sing it for you." And facing upstage, Caruso sang the coat aria. And at the end, the bass got a standing ovation, you know, for this performance. And when it was all over, they said, "You've got to record that." And he did, but he wouldn't allow it to be released during his lifetime. He said he didn't want to upset the basses by being able to sing their aria. But this is Caruso, the world-famous tenor, the best tenor probably ever, singing the bass aria from Puccini's La Boheme. The coat aria.
The coat aria.
From that four of La Boheme.
Classical stuff. I mean, the one thing I would say, and I know it hasn't been, this last year hasn't been very good for live music of any genre. It doesn't matter whether it's folk or opera or jazz or wherever you go, unfortunately. But I think if you want to get in, there's no better way of getting into opera than if you are lucky enough and can get a ticket and get a nice day to go down to Glyndebourne and have a day at Glyndebourne. I defy anyone, even if you're not that much into opera, not to enjoy a day at Glyndebourne, because it's, I mean, I've only been there once and I was very lucky that the day was glorious, but this idea of having opera and then popping out in between for sort of champagne and little sandwiches on, it was absolutely fantastic.
Opera Holland Park is quite good. It's a bit down market compared to Glyndebourne, but it's still very good.
Oh, that would suit me. That would suit me. Now, that we were mentioning other musics as well. What about, have you ever done any folk or listened to any folk or anything like that?
No, not really. No. I like listening to folk. I have a deep dislike of country and western.
Yeah, that's more of a specialist field, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of course, our great David Collister for years did a country and western programme, but it's music I've sort of struggled with a bit.
Yes.
I could imagine you listening to a bit of classical, though, or maybe a bit of
opera.
Oh,
yes, very much so. Very much so. And in fact, I brought along a classical disc, which is a favourite of mine today, but there obviously isn't going to be time for it.
No, what there might be time for, if we're lucky, though, is, and people will be thinking, well, is Ian actually going to choose any brass band music or not? Or are you going to be, and obviously you've been trying to think outside the box, as it were, and play some of the tracks which have influenced you and go back to your younger years. But if you're going to, if I was going to push you then for, you know, if we had time or we could squeeze it in for a little bit of brass band music.
Yes, I think if I ever make it through the pearly gates, I will sit in the seat nearest to where there's a brass band playing on the loudspeaker, and they will be playing, especially for my arrival, the romance, the second movement of Eric Ball's Festival Music. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Sounds good to me. Let's hear some. Lovely. Eric Ball and Romance. The one brass track that Time for Brass's Ian Cottier has nominated. You're listening to the, yes, Christmas special, the specialists, or the special of specialists, with all of Manx Radio specialists, John Kinnean, Ernie Thorne, Maurice Powell, Chris Kane, myself, H, and Ian Cottier, all talking a little bit about our specialist music, which you can hear every week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, through the week at 9 o'clock here on Manx Radio. And Maurice, have you got another little piece for us then?
I think some Haydn Wood might be appropriate, seeing as he was kind of, although born in West Yorkshire, just south of Huddersfield, the family moved here in the mid-1880s, and he spent his formative years here, eventually went to Royal College of Music as a violin, young violin virtuoso and eventually composer. And he came back to the island many, many times, right into the 1950s, and was kind of adopted, really, as a Manx composer. Eventually, he's just referred to in the local newspapers as our, you know, our Manx composer or our Douglas Wood or the young Douglas composer. He was kind of adopted, which he must have been very immensely proud of that. So a little bit of Haydn Wood. Haydn Wood was not a field collector of Manx national songs. We were talking about folk music a little bit earlier. He was not, but he did, of course, plunder Manx national songs, published, I think, in 1898, for inspiration for a lot of his music, Man in Veen, King Ori, the Manx Rhapsody, lots of things like that. So I think a very short piece. He wrote two Manx country sketches in the 1940s, I think, and the second of them, quite a short piece, is based on the Manx national song Hunt the Wren. So hopefully we'll whistle along with that. And also very appropriate, of course. Although I always think, please don't actually catch a wren, will you?
No, just use the plastic robin off your Christmas cake.
A rubber duck would do just as well, trust me. But yes, it would be entirely appropriate. As I say, Haydn Wood always thought of, although he never denied he was a Yorkshireman, he always thought of the Isle of Man as his home. Came here every year. His brother was here as well, of course, for years. As I say, a lot of his best compositions are based on Manx national songs. So this is a short piece, but I think very, very attractive.
Ah, yes, now, you see, John was nodding his head along with that one. We'll hunt the wren. Yes, it's something, you still do, do you? I take it you still
do? No, I've given
you
up.
Watch from afar?
Well, I don't walk so well these days.
You could hold the wren pole.
I suppose so. I used to go out and play for one of the groups that go round Douglas, and indeed do you.
Indeed.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. But it is fantastic how the tradition has carried on now, and there are lots of groups.
We started...
Taking your lead.
Well, the group that I used to play with, we started at the Woodburn Pub, and we ended up at Lawrence Kermode's house, the late Lawrence Kermode, down in Ballabruy. And we'd finish at his house at about 5 to midday.
That sounds all right, doesn't it?
And then we'd go back to the Woodburn.
Terrific. So do support your local Hunt the Wrenners wherever they may be tomorrow. And as John was saying, we will be out, at least Chris and I, with a motley crew around the sort of Alexandra Drive area and heading down, hopefully, towards the Lord Bishop. Oh, we haven't told him yet, but he'll know. He normally says yes and gets the champagne out, which is very kind of him.
They tell me he's good for a drink, is that right? I might make
Bishop,
the effort.
Bishop Peter has a
walking
line
already
in champagne. If we don't talk too much, we might squeeze a little bit more music in and perhaps one little bit more jazz. You mentioned Duke Ellington earlier on as one. The classics.
That given that he actually predated with his birth Fats Waller, that by the time he was getting into his 60s and reflecting on his journeys around the planet, with a lot of suites, he wrote a lot of pieces of music joined together in suites reflecting his travels and reflecting some of the different styles of music he picked up around the world. And very striking as it was in the 60s, I took it away when I went to university with me as one of Dad's collection that just stood out for me, the Far East Suite and A Tourist Point of View.
Tourist Point of View, I must admit, it's another one of those fantastic pieces of music which I've loved and sounds, again, as fresh now as it was when it was composed by Duke Ellington in the 1960s, I think it was, early 1960s. You know what? It is almost that time, as they say, to start thinking about eating again, I suppose, if it's Christmas Day. And we're going to finish off with a little piece as well, actually from Sweet and Swing, because I thought it was rather appropriate for Christmas Day to go out with, a wonderful track by Claude Thornhill and his orchestra called Snowfall. We'd just like to say thank you very much indeed for listening. We hope you've had a wonderful Christmas Day. We've really enjoyed ourselves here. God willing, you never know, we might be invited to come back next Christmas Day. What do you think, chaps?
If we last.
If we last. If we last.
I'm not talking for anyone other than myself.
Exactly.
Will there be more than one mince pie between us next year, do you think?
Well, I don't know. Depends how the budget goes. But yes, as John rightly says, if we're spared.
Exactly.
It's been lovely talking to you. A very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.